Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Hampton Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, this time of the day here on Eagle FM is your favorite duo keeping you company until the hour of 6 with one exciting topic after another. We're just here Monday to Friday going, you know, like DJ Khaled would. Another one. And speaking of another one, we are now looking at the rise in prices of pretty much everything from the look of things, taxi fare, fuel prices. So it doesn't matter if you are a motorist or you are a public or private transport user. The bottom line is the prices are just, going through the roof. And I know someone is going to start saying, you know what, I know the minister said, the taxi fare is gonna go to $15 Namibian dollars on the 18th of May. But this is my taxi. I'll start now. Relax. Before you end up at, the police station explaining why you did that, because everyone will be like, I looked at the date. It said 18 May 2026, and we're still, well, today is the 7th. But the thing is, the fuel prices of, the cost of what is going on in the Middle East is being felt here, irrespective of whether or not you had anything to do with, causing the war in the first place. So, this is the part where I would say be careful of how you vote, but I'm just gonna leave that aside because it's, I've come to learn it's more complicated than that. And now, for those of you that like to say, you know what, I'm not into politics, right? You're not into politics, right? At this point, that's when a lot of people start asking, why are they increasing the price? Well, you would know if you were into politics. Whether you like it or not, politics is going to reach you. It starts from terrible intentional political decision making, which spills over into the, into the world of economics. And then we all start feeling the pain after that. Speaking of, political decision making that spills over into the world of economics, and now we have to, that's when a lot of us start feeling the pinch and start asking the question as to why all these things are taking place. Today we are going to be talking about, our topic is very much tied into that, not in the fuel price and the subsequent taxi fare increase that is looming. But this is the World Press Freedom Day has just held, and now we are, four days after that. Now we're, let's talk about the state of the freedom of speech and the ipso facto freedom of the press. And the state of, how things have basically been in decline. Now, if you are as a large mainstream media content consumer coming out of the Western world, like yours truly here, everything from movies to news and everything, then things like suppression of freedom of speech is something that you have been told is something that only takes place in countries like China and Russia and North Korea and all those things. But really? Is it? Now, you know how they say, history is written by the victor. Well, it's not just history, it turns out. Narrative. The victor does not only write history. After they write history, they move on to shaping narrative. They tell you who to hate and who not to hate, who is a terrorist and who is a good guy, irrespective of whether or not, innocent people are caught in a crossfire. So, let's talk about the world of press, the world of information sharing, and which also something that we are seeing that, social media is actually pitching in, and we're seeing, self-proclaimed, journalists basically taking over that space. And a lot of people are divided as to, should we now start taking, you know, news headlines from content creators, or should we stick to the traditional mainstream media? And there's a reason why, you know, there's a reason behind this whole split. And now, well, traditionally you'd be told, well, unless it's heard on radio or you watched it on TV on a quote unquote legitimate news channel, then it's not true. But one thing that has been revealed by the, you know, well, the connectivity of social media, thanks to, you know, in large part to the internet that made that possible, is that, it's been revealed that for a large part of, mainstream media, they also played a significant part of misinforming the public as to why things were taking place the way they were in the world, in politics. Take, for example, if you look at, the easiest example, since we are, you know, since we are an English speaking country, we don't know much about what's going on in, we don't know much about what's going on in countries like, countries like Germany, for example, because their official language is German. But, German is spoken here, and, a lot of Namibians would understand those that are, familiar with the language, like yours truly, HD, for example. They will know what's going on in Germany. The French, French-speaking countries know more about what's going on in, in France than in England or the US, for example. These countries share a lot in common in terms of, political and economic atmosphere. So it's very easy to translate in between English and France, English in German, English in, because they have a lot in common, these countries, in terms of how they conduct their political and economic affairs. But it's kind of difficult to find out what's going on in China unless you follow CGTN, because I understand now they have an English, they have an English part. And it's kind of difficult to find out what's going on in countries like North Korea, what's going on in much of the Arab countries. Arab countries, because most of those countries they don't use English. Now, a lot of people think that English is a universal language that's spoken by everyone. They should be understood by everyone. No. Don't be shocked if you run into a white person who doesn't speak English, because, well, English is not all what's spoken. Europe is huge. The easiest example of that would be the Germans. They'll be there speaking German. And you're like, oh, no, well, you don't speak English, but you're white. Yeah, I'm white, I know that. But you know what else I am? German. You know what we use in our country? Not English, that's for sure. Now, the freedom of the press, the freedom of the press in any country is heavily reliant on that country's freedom of expression. In countries where the freedom of expression of the citizens to express themselves is suppressed, so is the freedom of the press. Now, I really like to sort of take a few steps back and explain at least the very simple of how we should understand freedom of speaking.
And
welcome back. So, no kidding. So, let's continue now, shall we? Look, when you look at when you look at the how freedom of the press in any country and by large extent basically globally, the freedom of the press in any country is tied into the freedom of expression of that particular country. And the most tricky part, I think, about legislating some of these things is, how easy it is to abuse, irrespective of where you put the ball. When you put the ball in the hands of the citizen, just tell them, you know what, you can just go ahead and express yourself as much as you want. They'll start insulting everyone, including themselves. The irony is we're all adults, but that's how easy it is to basically abuse a very simple right that you are given. You know what? You have the right to express yourself. And then you'll hear people, they'll just start insulting each other left, right, and center on public platforms. I mean, we already do it even with the right regulations in place. So, take for example, if you take the very same power, since people are too, ordinary citizens, basically the masses are too irresponsible with this freedom of expression, how about we just put it in the hands of the legislative authorities? You'd think, if this power is in the hands of ordinary citizens and they're abusing it by insulting each other and insulting pretty much everyone they can because they have the freedom to do so, how about we just take this power and then shift it from the citizens to the lawmakers? You know what? You're going to create another chaos, because now anyone that questions that public official's power is going to be suppressed. So then you now have this conundrum of, who do we give this power? Do we put this power in the hands of lawmakers and then keep the citizens out, the ordinary citizens out? Or do we put this power in the hands of citizens and then keep the lawmakers out? Because after all, democracy is centered on the idea that it's a government of the people, for the people, by the people. It's a people-centered governance. Irrespective of who you give the power, whether it's the people or the lawmaker, it's bound to be abused. That's where now you have this confusion of, oh my God, now who do we give it to? Don't give it to anyone. Not the lawmakers, not the people on the ground. In other words, now you have to give it to the people and put some guardrails in place. And that's where we find ourselves. We have the freedom to express ourselves, but also you have to understand that helmet, even though you have a microphone in your face Monday through Sunday, basically, 6 days a week that you have a microphone in your face, you have the freedom to express yourself. But you have to understand that that freedom has limits. You can't just stand on the microphone and start to, insulting, a girl who's, who refused to give you her number. Yes, you have the freedom to express yourself, but you can't do that. There are things you can't express, even though you have the freedom. Those are the guardrails. Yeah, you asked her for a number. She had the right to, she had a choice of saying, of choosing between yes and no. She chose no. Therefore, move on. Now, imagine if those guardrails were not in place. Those of you that I ask and you for your number and you tell me that, you want a tall, dark, and handsome guy, you people would be in serious trouble. Now, those guardrails are, the only thing that's standing in between, me and over expressing my freedom of calling you all types of colorful names because you refuse to give me your number. Now, you can imagine how radio stations would sound if those guardrails were not in place. Every time every time a radio presenter would get damned, everyone would know they got damned because of the insults they would be spewing. But thanks to Karen, you should really, really, really thank Karen for that. If you didn't know how important, you know, if you didn't know the importance of Karen, now you do. So, let's talk about the visible global decline in press freedom, even with all the guardrails in place. The press freedom, one thing that's being observed is that there is a significant decline in press freedom globally. And this is with all the guardrails in place. You have to understand that, like I pointed out earlier, this is a very toxic form, you know, mode of power. You put it in, if you put it solely in the hands of lawmakers, it's going to be abused because it's going to, you know, someone is going to start using it to suppress opposition parties or, you know, anyone that basically opposed the idea. The next thing you know, it's being extended into jailing anyone that questions authority. That's a bad idea. So you can't put it on solely in the hands of lawmakers. And you can't put it solely in the hands of citizens because, well, they'll start... Every time there is a divorce, and lately we have been having a lot of those, you will now have a husband and a wife in different podcasts, you know, throwing shades at each other in all kinds of colorful words. So, the most important freedom here is the freedom to express yourself. And one thing that I have basically spent 23 minutes yapping about is how, as you can imagine, confusing it can be to balance. You can't put the freedom, you can't put the expression solely in the hands of lawmakers because it will be used to suppress freedom of speech and each, you know, political opposition is basically everyone that disagrees with authority. And if you can't put it unregulated in the hands of, in the hands of citizens because now you have, I'll just come here and start, insulting anyone that refused to give me their number. So, that's why you need the guardrails, right? You need the guardrails.
Why would you insult someone who doesn't want to give you the number?
Because I have the freedom of expression.
And that person owns the freedom to withhold their number.
Now you know why the guardrails must be in place.
No, but you and I, we know it happens.
Definitely.
Yeah, because, okay, first and foremost, our gender doesn't like rejection.
I think,
be honest, we have to throw them under the bus there because they don't like rejection.
That part is very true. Look, the Canadian psychologist explained something that I found fascinating. I think should be practiced globally. Mm. It should be, you know, very central to men's conference. I know we were told, yeah, it's okay to cry, but sure, cry. Like a giant baby. But the point is...
That men's conference is just... It just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. Look, the reason why I keep... I like going back to Jordan Peterson is that he did explain a support group. Mm. I think that was in Canada.
Mm.
He tells a story of a support group that was made up of just men. Just men support group. And ladies, relax. You'll understand later as to why it was just made out of, men. The thing is, any man was welcome to join that group.
Yeah.
But you'll have to go through a series of initiations. Don't worry, circumcision is not part of it. Now, the thing is.
Okay, I'm still waiting. What it has to do with freedom of expression.
It has to do with, with rejection.
Ah.
A lot of us, can't handle rejection, yeah. Whether it's in intimate relationship, platonic relationship, or just employee relationship. We're not very good at handling rejection, and rejection bites. Now that support group basically decided to come up with a mechanism to train their members to understand that when you are going to ask someone to do something for you, expect two different answers.
They could say yes.
Yeah. Either yes or no. And you have to know how to handle either.
Mm.
Yeah, you can't just storm to, you can't just go and ask someone for something and you already have a yes at the back of your head.
No, not you already have it. You automatically believe the answer should just be yes.
Yeah, the answer must be yes.
Yeah, it's going to be yes.
It has to be yes.
It will be yes.
Yeah. So, as part of their last initiation procedure was they would send you out there to ask 50 smoking hot ladies for their numbers. 50.
Mm.
And you're being monitored based pretty much all throughout the, you know, well, all throughout the whole process.
Yeah.
The idea is not for you to go out there and become a Casanova. Mm. The idea is for you to go out there and be told all kinds of colorful ways ladies can say no to a guy.
Yeah.
And you should be able to handle that.
Which it will happen.
Yeah. Because I'm telling you, after girl number 15, you can handle pretty much, you know, you are building, you know, a character in terms of handling rejection at this point. By the time that you get to girl number 50.
What? You've got a lizard skin.
You have skin on. You can, now when someone says no, you know how to react better than throwing punches.
I still don't know about that sentence about throwing punches.
Yep.
Yeah.
Assuming one of my homeboys is not listening, so he'll murder me. The first time he was told no was in high school. He asked out a girl.
Mm.
Don't worry, he didn't throw punches.
Oh, but I hope so.
He didn't. That's why I found it fascinating when he told that story. That he told me that story. The first time he was basically told no, as in no, 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 was in high school, asked out a girl, and he was devastated. That's when I was like, hang on a second, this happens. He's the last born, so it's just told a lot of yes.
Or he was allowed a lot of things.
He was basically allowed a lot of things that he didn't hear no very often.
Yeah.
So when he was in high school and for the first time, I had no that didn't change. I was like, boy, that was painful. I'm like, yeah, that was painful.
It's not even supposed to be painful.
Look, it's painful if you started planning your wedding before asking her out.
And she doesn't know who you are.
Yeah. The girl has no idea you're married
she
and you have kids.
She doesn't know who you are. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's our mistake, Abu. That's our mistake. We have a life in the head, but there's no reality in that life.
You see, thank you very much. That's our mistake. We start planning the wedding before asking for her number. But it turns out it's supposed to be the other way around.
Apparently, the ladies also do the same thing.
Really?
They go and have planned baby names and things. If you just said hello.
Baby names?
You just said hello to the person.
So it's both of us. Gender equality check.
No, if you have a conversation with women, you just scratch us. They do the exact same things that we do. They feel bad if they're also rejected.
Rejected?
Hmm?
They get rejected?
Yeah, you know, they go and approach the good-looking guy. And the good-looking guy says no, or he just, you know.
No wonder I can.
He just, you know. Does his business and evaporates, then you should hear this.
So at this point, you already planned, you know, the baby names.
You should hear the stories from ladies.
Baby names, seriously?
How devastated they are, and then you are just there listening to them, né, while you're having your having your lunch or drinking your beer there. And then suddenly, you know.
Baby names, seriously?
You're in the crossfire of being asked, right, what's wrong with your gender? And you're like, what do you mean? What did I do? No, what's wrong with your gender? Can't they say I'm a good person? And you go like, oh, you think you are a good person?
Well, just tell them, that's our daily bread.
What? Do you want me to be beaten up? It's not my issue. I'm not going to deal with that business. No, Helmut.
Okay, but ladies, here's one thing.
She decided to say yes to a guy who has the potential of being, unfortunately, a philanderer.
And
I'm not even going to say he's a player. Uh-huh. He's a philanderer. Straightforward. Why he philandered?
I can change him. Right.
Yeah, let her try to change him. That's her life goal. Other people's life goal is about making money and improving their lives and getting out of poverty or generational poverty in one other way.
Uh-huh.
No, some people believe they must change just that one person.
Yeah. Look, I found something like that.
That one person is looking into the sun.
Uh-huh. And it's like, you know what? I can change him. And, at least he's coming back to me. Yeah, with STD. And look, the thing is, you really have to understand what's going on.
How did we get here? I mean, how did we get here? We were still on Jordan Peterson and rejection.
That's how we got here. The whole train basically went full detour.
Yeah.
Now, coming back, you know, the freedom of expression for me, I think it's very, it's very difficult to balance because, now what we are seeing is, first of all, if you put it solely unregulated in the hands of lawmakers, it's going to be abused because they will use it against each other. Whatever political party is going to dominate will use it against basically suppressing, anyone that disagrees with them.
You will get basically a socialist state.
Thank you.
Because you will have censorship.
Censorship.
We've known censorship in Namibia pre-independence. The people, the generation that's now currently in their 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s even, know about censorship, Helmut.
Yeah.
I still have 3 siblings. Obviously, they will tell you primarily what went wrong in the 80s and the 70s, specifically in the 80s when they were now, kids and became kids and teenagers, from primary school into high school scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And the censorship that was present there. So if government regulation starts doing something, talking about government regulation, like a case in point today.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point today, Helmut, is that we sit with a conundrum of the announcement from the Works Ministry regarding the taxi in fuel price, the taxi fare increase. Now,
mm-hmm.
And this is now a situation where the government directly tries to regulate something, directly regulating something, mm-hmm. or directly, like you said. But you're putting in the politician's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who are actually the most powerful people in government?
Well,
it's from the executive director's position to the government employees, government staff downwards. They are the ones that know the ins and outs of the laws.
Yeah.
Like when you and I did the seaweed discussion, yeah, it was from because of a directorate's decision. And it was escalated, an appeal had to be written to the minister. And the unfortunate thing was, it was literally in the period that the minister, prior to Minister Zamwani, mm-hmm. was unfortunately incarcerated. So there was no space for anyone resembling a minister to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there was a deputy minister, but it was written to the minister. So the people that know the systems are the people from the executive director downwards who know the systems in government.
Yeah.
Now, here's the concern, Helmut. They were obviously the target now recently under Donald Trump's re-election into office. Because like I mentioned back on Tuesday, or was it Monday, regarding the first governmental officials that Trump fired were the directors, they call them the directors general, but it's literally, imagine them auditor generals in each ministry. But their names are director generals.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys were all fired because they were the anti-corruption watchdogs in each ministry of the United States.
So it was basically a low-key night of long knives.
Yeah, but in the public service.
Yeah.
So their officers, their staff, their management gets fired. Now, this technically means that for anyone, if you're looking at it like from a Namibian perspective, It's literally like you removing the Public Procurement Act.
Ooh, boy.
It's literally like removing the Public Procurement Act. And it's literally firing the investigators in the ACC.
Yeah.
So that the ACC cannot investigate anyone. You fire just the investigating department. But we saw such a mechanism from the Fisheries Observer Fund.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a space of 10 years, between 2010 and 2021, we didn't see any reports. We didn't know of anything.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what they were observing. So from that, you can deduce it was just...
That was the information blackout was taken advantage of.
Exactly. So this obviously means and should tell everybody else that, and I assume the Fisheries Observer Fund is an SOE from what we saw, because they have an act.
Yeah.
So they were purposefully told, don't report. They were purposefully told. Now, that is literally what happens if you allow things up to the state.
Not for 10 years, that was intentional.
Helmut, this has been for 20 years, my guy. For 20 years. How did I only find out in 2023 that the South Africans depleted and literally annihilated our was it sardines or pilchard stock? It's one of the two, sardines or pilchards. The South Africans annihilated our pilchard stocks, or one of those small fish stocks, in the 70s and the 80s. So we literally have no information about, has the resource recuperated? Has the resource returned? Because in essence, the fish, when they feel threatened, they just move away.
Like any species.
Yeah, they just move away because there's too much human activity here.
Yeah.
Now, if people don't know what this means, is that wild animals will stay away from humans as far as possible.
Yeah.
Under certain extreme conditions will they move closer to humans. So these are conditions of drought. These are conditions of severe weather. These are conditions of habitat loss specifically, and also encroachment by humans into the habitats of said wild animals or wildlife. And for some reason, Helmut, when we look at resource management up until today is not generating the data that helps us understand what we need to either manage, what is the current stock levels of the resource, how much money is generated from this resource if it is extracted or if it's harvested, and how many jobs were created additionally, or how many jobs were lost? Because we need to know the positives and the negatives as well, yep. Obviously to navigate economic challenges. Now, that's an information blackout. That's not what happens if you leave things just up to the state. You trust the state. It's a trust me bro situation. Yes, we are talking about World Press Freedom Day discussions here, and like we started off with freedom of expression. But currently right now, we have an Access to Information Act. You need to know what's happening in your government, what's happening in your community. And the only reason for you to do, and the only means by which you can do that, is if you inquire and you ask a question. I would like to apply as a Namibian from a previously disadvantaged position. I would like to apply for a fishing quota. How can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out you get sent from one office to the next office for no apparent reason without adequate explanations. And it's also, you know, you're basically being given Simba chips for no reason, mm-hmm. where you asked literally for potato chips. To start off from, even though they both are made from potatoes, but the one is more fulfilling than the other one.
Mm.
So that's the kind of level specifically which you also boils down to. Now, I know I went into an economic trend and what they call that thing, and tangent, but just if you bring it to the freedom of expression, or let's, for example, say into the freedom of, you know, what World Press Freedom is all about. Being able to share information, because that's technically what we do. We're information peddlers. We share information.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I cited the taxi fare public notice or discussion of earlier today in today's discussion is because I've been asking Helmut for a good month and a half, 2 months since I started hearing, and I wrote the few little articles about the Minister of Works and Transport's particular sort of like standoff with the e-hailing economy or the e-hailing sector, which is a gig economy function. Remember this, it's gig economy. So the e-hailing guys are literally, you know, they could be unemployed, they're partially employed, and they make, you know, it's a way for them to make money as long as they've got a license and a car, and they form part of an overall economic function of passenger transport. But in light of Donald Trump's war, which automatically increases fuel costs, the minister was supposed to do the exact opposite of an increase. You come down with a price. You take away a penalty. You do something completely different. Now, here's where things regarding access to information, freedom of expression, literally all sent on. So the minister made a to me, Helmut, to me, it translates to a unilateral position. So he took, okay, not a unilateral, what's the other word? But it's almost like powers vested in him. Not powers vested in a process. Powers vested in a person. So depending on the weather, that person can have a different mood that day, which is an unpredictable and an unsustainable, you know, system to incorporate, you know, discretionary powers. Yeah, that's the thing that some of the ministers have.
Discretionary powers.
The discretionary powers. So...
Yeah, but having discretionary power that is not having any kind of checking mechanism is
exactly Helmut.
So
exactly.
So I'm assuming if you know, and this is something that you basically have in every ministry, and now if
yeah,
you have,
and that's why the what's that previous ministry's name? Industries, industrialization, and trade.
Mm-hmm.
Why they had to change the promotion investment bill. There was a clause that also sat there and said the minister had discretionary powers to decide on things. But they had to remove it year after I think 2022, 2023, when the last time I attended that particular public stakeholder engagement. And at that stage, the minister at the time, Lucia Ipumbu, presented and explained that that particular clause was taken out of the bill. There's a final decision by the minister to make a decision, which is not correct. So now your whole economic trajectory in the Namibian economy depends on one person. If that person is sick and then, or if the person is incarcerated, like what happened with the seaweed discussion and agriculture, and then, we can't have discretionary functions. There's no such thing. This person doesn't have the qualification to make a judgment call on an economic process.
Wait, there are fail-safes built into this, right? Or like an overriding mechanism in terms of...
Helmut, a discretionary power means it's the final say.
So there's no parliamentary influence that comes in?
There's no oversight committee. There is no panel in the or a board in the ministry to decide upon something with systems. No, there are no systems. There are no systems. So the concern from this would be, how do we actually modernize the Namibian economy? The Namibian economy's modernization depends greatly, what we've now seen, on generating data, having information at hand, and making decisions from the information. That's all it is. That's how the line needs to flow. Just like that. Generate data, process this data, make decisions on the data. There was a business guy, he was an American or an Australian, who works and operates a business in China. And the one guy, the guy that interviewed him asked him, okay, so how does China try to correct a problematic policy? Or if they see the policy is creating more issues than benefits.
Yeah.
How does the Chinese government, you know, sort of like repivot or re-strategize or, you know,
correct the policy mistake or something?
He literally describes this guy. He literally describes, well, in China, they have literally a saying that says, don't attack the politician or the bureaucrat,
yeah,
the government bureaucrat.
Attack the policy.
Attack the policy so that the policy can be amended. Don't blame someone for writing the thing. They were probably thinking, okay, this looks like an okay policy for now. We'll have to see what happens in the ecosystem.
So in other words, they're just exercising what the law, you know, the powers that the law allows them to.
Exactly. Hmm. But here, we go give powers to people in Namibia without any legal basis.
What do you mean?
Okay. I'm going back to the seaweed discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that the seaweed discussion was based on an outdated piece of legislation or an ordinance that was used. All it said was register the seaweed. The guy didn't have to, because when you and I read it, that particular ordinance, it didn't say show the ingredients of what your seaweed is made from. It was just say fill in a form, describe what the function of the product is, and what kind of a fertilizer it is.
Yeah.
And then he got rejected. And immediately after rejection, there was a 10-day period by which he can write an appeal letter.
Yeah.
But the appeal letter has to go to the minister. The appeal letter has to go to the minister, and the minister has to consult with two or three other people regarding this appeal.
Yeah.
And after the minister gets that letter, there's a response time the minister has to give. There's a reasonable amount of time for response time to the appeal letter. So there's a period before the minister decides, and there's a period after the minister has to decide. After the minister made a decision, in terms of like a decision, a final decision or something like that. Now, this process that you're writing to the minister, now let's say the minister is someone that has never farmed in their life. They know what the word farm is. They know what the phrase farming is. They've seen a farm, but they've never farmed in their life. Or they're a farmer. They were in some other previous time period in their lifespan, a farmer at one stage, like a kid or something. Now you're coming up with an innovative technology. You have the technology. You're an engineer. You're making fertilizer from seaweed. No one in Namibia has known that fertilizer can be made from seaweed. But you are doing it. Okay, I'm not promoting this guy, but I'm just explaining the dynamics. The concern from this is, Hamoud, new technologies will continuously pop up.
Yeah.
Every day. Every day. Innovations will pop up. And as these innovations pop up, the situation is one of how do we approach the discussion of, okay, modernize this oversight ability from a ministry or this decision-making process. Because if a ministry has the final say regarding giving a permission or some sort of a certification for you to sell the product in Namibia, then they should have also updated their systems.
To add on and okay, there already is an appeal process.
Yeah.
Discretionary powers. After an appeal is made to a minister, like in the seaweed example that you just gave, mm-hmm. for example, that decision is not made unanimously by the minister, right? There's a consultation that's done within the ministry to come up with an overall decision.
It's like the minister has to talk to two or three other people, you know, and under their little powwow that they have to do, mm-hmm. powwow.
And I'm assuming in that group, one of them has to be an expert in the topic under discussion. They have to make a decision on.
And that's the concern. None of them are external market operators. None of them are an association of an industry of fertilizer manufacturers.
They
are all government employees.
Look, unless we have experts, look, if you ask me, they can be public or private, as long as they, there's one or two of them that knows a thing or two about fertilizer.
Yeah.
Otherwise, then we are looking at the Trump administration diplomacy of sending, real estate agents to go for a nuclear deal. It doesn't make sense.
And which it doesn't. Which it literally doesn't.
Yeah, because, yes, if you are going to make a decision on, if you are going to make a decision on energy, for example, you would, I think it would be a good idea to have an energy expert, depending on the source of energy that you're talking about.
Mm.
Whether it's, propane, energies in with the use of propane, firewood, if you are going to talk about fossil fuel, for example, it would be a good idea to have an expert in that line of work that deals with fossil fuel.
Mm.
Not just in the, and also it's also a good idea to have one, if it's just about using, just have an expert in, in fossil fuel.
Yeah.
It's about trade, then you want someone that understands how the fossil fuel market globally operates. I think that's the only way that you'll make a rational decision. Otherwise, then you will be just talking to mainstream media saying, okay, you know what? We want to negotiate, but Iran wants to negotiate, does not want to negotiate. But every time that both parties bring together negotiators, Iran sends expert in that particular field. You send in guys that are telling people, you see, this counter is made out of marble.
That is true.
What does that have to do with literal atom splitting?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. And I think this is where this is a part of governance now that that is spilling over into the decline of press freedom globally. In 2025, that's last year. The Swedish-based organization, that's the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance.
Mm.
They do produce annual reports that looks at, democracy around the world.
Yeah.
And last year's, one thing that sets apart their last year's report is that they brought in, it's one official document that was able to come across that ties the decline in democracy, in democratic governance, into the decline of press freedom globally.
Why does that sound like the Afrobarometer's comparison of on which scale are you if whether you have a job or not?
In terms of...
or your perception of corruption.
Yeah. They are really interconnected.
Yeah.
Now, one thing they noticed in this report is that countries that don't have... you have to understand that the concept of democracy is based on representative governance.
Mm.
In other words, the people being the ultimate power. And then you have, they have the power to vote in their representatives. And those representatives will then have to listen to them. Now, for those representatives to listen to their subject, there must be a channel of communication that does not make the subjects worry about what they can say and what they cannot say. So that means, in country, and also every time that you talk about, press freedom, countries that do not have, the level of representative governance in a democratic or a republic, constitutional republics that we have today, those are the countries that are just, seen as take a dictatorship, for example. How much press freedom do you think is going on in a dictatorship? Not much.
It depends, Ahmed, because when I say it depends, you have to look at what kind of information is being shared. Are we looking at one stage there was this fanaticism about investigative journalism, which is always a hop, skip, and a jump away from being stifled with retribution, meaning there's a lot of revenge taking place. I have to be honest.
Yeah.
There's a lot of revenge, and I actually like my sleep. I want to sleep at night. I don't want unnecessary stress.
Yeah.
So the investigative part sometimes also, in their own right, perpetuate things that you would have to ask the question of, okay, prove what you are saying. Show correspondence. Show actual documentation or proof that people were involved in what is
this kind of dubious activity.
Yeah, this dubious activity. Instead of writing me a hearsay article.
Mm-hmm.
And a hearsay article requires actual, you need quantities of something. Was something delivered? Was there a weighbill? Was there a delivery note? What's the actual accounting saying? And in some cases, it's not really, it's just like you're doing, playing with a flashlight, you know, you just flash it on someone's face and then blind them a little bit. It's like a shock and awe tactic. You flash it in their eyes and then you pull it back and then you're like, yeah, you see,
you know,
I've got the power.
Yeah, I can do this.
Yeah. I can shine a light wherever I want to shine a light. It doesn't actually speak to anything regarding, okay, how informed is the reader from this point? Even though we at the e-paper, the Villager e-paper, we also do something slightly different. Obviously, we speak about industry news and like foreign affairs in some cases. It's also been a long time since I've written a foreign affairs article. But, a few like foreign affairs analyses and also global energy/geopolitical energy subjects, analysis. Yeah. Because at the heart of this, Helmut, if you look at how a government, or let's say, let's call them a government for now, even though they're not a government, but they're actually a government, the EU. How the EU is purposefully trying to change the energy discussion. Purposefully. Not by saying, drill, baby, drill. I will go and kidnap someone's national leader just to get to the oil.
To their resources.
And then the CEO of the oil company has more common sense than the political leader who made the statement saying,
do you even know how these things work?
By literally saying, brah, do you want me to hire an army, a personal army, just to protect the people that work for me? Do you want me to do that? Do you want me to go to war literally?
With a country.
With a country.
I don't have a budget for that.
who wants that bad public relations? Because literally that's what happened to Iran. In 19, when did Mossadegh pass away? Or Mossadegh's overthrow?
1953.
Yeah, literally 1953. And who was present? The Americans and the British, once again.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we look at this as, why are we even going that far? The COVID vaccine misinformation discussion was literally something by the American CIA. Because they were allowing their private economy to try and find their vaccines. But then the Chinese came up with a traditionally made vaccine. The Russians the same. Then they spread the
misinformation about other vaccines to basically stamp out the competition.
Basically, sort of like to dampen the particular. But here's what it caused, Helmut. It caused hesitancy for the nations that got the donations from Russia and China. It caused vaccine hesitancy. Because now people... when people heard, okay, so it heightens the level of HIV contraction, for example, what Sputnik, if you took Sputnik, it heightens the prevalence of HIV contraction. And if you took Sinopharm, the Chinese one, suddenly it's not as effective. It doesn't have the green light from who and which entity.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just a lot of noise. But when you come to now...
all the meds coming out of our competition is not healthy. Just ours is the perfect one.
Exactly. And when you get to the discussion of what happened...
espionage.
If you get to the discussion of what the Americans created,
Most
of the American products failed. Most of the American... And they even failed by their own CDC standards. Not even by World Health standards.
Okay, that's painful.
They failed their medical standards and their medical efficacy. For example, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, though it was mispromoted as a single vaccination.
Yeah.
The thing had less than 30% efficacy. Less than 30%. And they wanted to sell this to developing countries. Not even to the United States, because the American, what was that guy's name? That Fauci guy.
Oh.
He was told all the hospitals, and all the hospitals said no to the Johnson vaccine.
Anton Fauci.
And everybody was asking them, why did they even bother trying to research and develop a vaccine if they were going to make something that literally is as good as toilet water? I mean, and that's literally the issue at hand here. So on one side, the private sector tries to do a lot of hits and misses. Well, they're trying to provide the solution that is actually needed. And then when there is governments that actually do something, There's a lot of propaganda flying around.
Yep.
And the propaganda is propaganda against and propaganda for.
You know how one of the biggest issue with getting news from social media, because that's how it started, because when it started, you know, all the established, you know, media houses basically global were like, no, don't get news from social media. There's a lot of misinformation. And then they went to start creating accounts on the social media platforms.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, you know, that's technology basically that emerged, and when the social media technology emerged, it gathered basically a large number of people, and information sharing is about people. Mm. You always want to share your information to the largest crowd you can reach, and that group more often these days is on social media.
Mm.
So now what you have there is but there's still that idea that take, for example, don't get news from a content creator that's just gathering news headlines and then talking about them, because that could be misinformation. And you know what? Yes, it could. It could be misinformation. But the thing is, when you look at mainstream media now, when it comes to misinformation, mainstream media is not innocent either.
Oh, yes.
They're not innocent either. For one, I mean, take that statement that you just used.
Mm.
You have mainstream media that's telling you that the only vaccine that's safe is the one from our country. And all the other vaccines that come from other countries, those ones are bad. That's just corporate greed 101.
Mm.
Now, we are talking about a situation of life and death here. And even that you want to monetize on.
Yep.
And so the biggest misinformation, mainstream media invented misinformation because of trying to just tell one side of a story to a narrative. Somalia is known to have what? Pirates, because they hijack ships and steal their goods.
Mm. They were fishermen at one stage.
And
they were noble at another stage.
They were noble until a bunch of guys started coming and started stealing their resources. Who is this guy? The head of the executive outcome, the South African Special Forces Group.
Mm.
They tried to broker a deal between those Somalian quote unquote pirates and one company, but he didn't reveal like what company that contracted them to try and to help them combat the issues that the issues that they were having with those armed Somali groups.
Mm.
Well, according to him, this is a special forces group. These guys literally wrote a book that Blackwater in the US is running on. So what they did, according to him, was they tried to, the diplomatic way.
Yeah.
They wrote a letter to the head of the quote unquote pirate group. Now that pirate group guy, they decided to send in their demands that, you know what, we're willing to work together with these guys as long as they meet this and this and this and this demands. So I think they went through a back and forth exchange of information between executive outcome and this the so-called pirate groups.
Yeah.
Then the Somalian guys now came up with an agreement that was very reasonable to the executive outcome guys, because they're the middle guys in this discussion.
Mm.
They took those terms and then gave it to that company. They never responded. Now, what that company wanted was to bulldoze decisions.
Mm.
With negotiation like that, where you want your decisions to take primary, that's not diplomacy, that's bullying. And it can then be argued that it's negotiations like that, or the failure of negotiations like that, that brings a rise to what? Armed mercenaries like the pirates they were facing.
Mm.
Their actions, whether they know it or not, whether they like it or not, created those groups. Because they knew that if you sit across the table with this corporate guy, they're not going to listen to you. They would just want to bulldoze all the decisions through.
Mm.
So they decided to put their hands on the easiest guns they can find and start pretty much shooting at any ship. But the point I'm trying to make here is one of narrative. When a bunch of armed guys in Somalia hijack a ship. It's piracy. That's what Donald Trump was doing to Venezuela and is still doing to Iran now. It's not piracy. They are boarding the ship.
Yep.
Now, that right there, you have misinformation 101.
Yeah.
Coming straight out of mainstream media. And the Swedish headquartered organization here that looks at the state of democracy globally and how the decline in democracy is spilling over into the decline of freedom of the press is one that I found very interesting, because, and this brings me back to what, to my song. Whoever came up with political parties didn't think it through.
Why?
For one, you have an organization that we should trust into running a country.
Mm.
It doesn't render a service or make a product to make its own revenue.
No.
But it wants to be independent in all the decisions that it makes in governance.
Yes.
But it wants to be spoon-fed in terms of donations.
Yes. Which are not... By law, it said, just let us know of a donation.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Namibia. Just let us know of the donation. You know, publicize it in the media, which does not happen. And yeah, and that's as far as it goes.
You see, that's the biggest problem, because is that a political party?
Yeah.
The only thing you're selling is lying. And it'd be, you know, you sell it very well if you live in a country where people are not interested in politics.
Helmut. The only thing you're selling is lying.
Hey, why do you think the, you know, the shortest serving presidential Madagascan president wanted to come up with a lie detector for ministers? But that's a brilliant idea.
That was.
Like, look, I think the biggest flaw in political parties is the source of revenue.
Mm.
A lot of them don't have sources of revenue. Mm. And because of that, they are heavily reliant on donor funding. And let's face it, no one donates $1 billion without coming to ask for, you know, or well, for a favor in return.
Yeah.
No one does that. Because even if you, running a political party, had $1 billion, there's no way you'll just hand it over like that without going to ask for, you know, for a favor in return. That is the reason why a large part of Western mainstream media went bananas during the Trump administration, because, when Trump was running for office.
Mm.
Because Peter Thiel has more power than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because he poured billions of dollars in the Trump campaign. Now, here's the thing.
Oh, and he hates humans.
And democracy is not his thing.
Yeah, he also hates that.
So, the biggest problem with the Western world, and we are looking at the Western countries, in terms of freedom of expression and basically governance itself, is that you have political parties who don't render a service or sell a product to make their own money, but they want to run countries.
Yeah.
And the only way they make money is through donations, and the donation coming out of the private sector. But what they want is the private sector to just give them that money and then sit without asking for any favors in return. No one in their right mind will do that.
No.
If you want real democracy, you will have to start telling political parties, you guys should start venturing into manufacturing. Or at least offer a service where you will have your own money. Because wherever you have financial sovereignty, you are going to have, that sovereignty is going to spill into governance.
Mm.
If your financial, you know, if your revenue is compromised, so will be your governance.
It's also like the accusation, Helmut, that still exists specifically for, and even here in Namibia, the politicians that are positioned close to successful parties who either have direct business interests, meaning they are either shareholders, stakeholders of businesses, and they obviously, extract direct benefits when said business either wins a contract or, you know, earns a direct sort of like an income.
Yeah.
Now, in the broad scheme of things, a politician, and this is now the first one of the few times I'm actually defending a politician, they don't have to feel ashamed for having a business before they became the politician.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. But if you became a politician and you reach some level of prominence,
and the level of prominence literally allows you to set up a company that was established yesterday through a briefcase and it scores a lucrative tender. Then it's a
conflict. It's out of the blue.
It's just like that. And suddenly now there are like five people operating there that didn't have jobs yesterday. That looks dubious.
Yeah.
To anyone from the outside from the onset, it just looks dubious. But if you were a politician that had businesses before you became a politician, because there are such success stories in the world.
Yeah.
One of them is, what was the guy's name? What is the guy's name? I just watched the thing this morning. Okay. So I watched a documentary, Hamid, about why can't the rest of South America be Uruguay? Or why can't the world try to be Uruguay? Doesn't have resources. But back in 1913, they literally they were one of the first countries to actually institute free education, which Namibia is striving for. Institutionalized, meaning they pass a whole bunch of laws and establish a whole bunch of institutions to look after social welfare and ensure that happiness is the most important currency in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the aspect of affordability versus, you know, just striving or just rapidly chasing economic prosperity. Because that's the thing that Namibia is currently chasing. Namibia is chasing economic prosperity.
Mm-hmm. How's that going?
But the concerns has been for 30 years, Namibia is saying economic prosperity, but we are not aligning the prosperity phrase or narrative with the people of the country. Now, our president was obviously, her new slogan is, we are too few to be poor. Yes, we know that as well. Namibians know that. We are too few to be poor. But then we come back to the concern again, is how do you position whatever benefits there are closer to Namibians? Now, Helmut, we already have a mechanism known as the Sovereign Wealth Fund, the Velvicha Sovereign Wealth Fund. But the Sovereign Wealth Fund should act, for example, like what's the thing's name? Like what's happening with the guys in the Middle East, the Dubai guys, the Qataris, yeah. Kuwaitis,
the Omanis.
If you're a citizen, if you were born and raised in that country,
yeah,
you get a dole. It's a dole system. It's not
sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah, they get a dole system from selling oil. But here's the concern: research has been done on why aren't those guys taking the Qatar, all those small Arab economies, advancing them. They're actually splurging money to invite everyone else from around the world to work for them,
mm-hmm.
but not their own people. Well, here's the thing. Their people realize there's a way of life that they love, which is herding camels, being baked in the sun.
Who in their right mind? How many Namibians would work if implemented that level of sovereign wealth fund distribution?
No one. But you would actually, Helmut, work from a basis of comfort instead of a basis of deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, being in survival mode.
The whole time.
Yep.
Which is not nice.
Oh, survival mode just is going to enter a whole new era, but before that, commercial break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, 16 minutes into the hour of five. If you just tuned in, either you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, your favorite duo this time of the day, keeping you company as you drive home or as you, well, just burn through whatever it is that is has a looming due date. If you're just tuned in, wherever you're tuned in from, thank you for tuning in. And today's discussion is based on the World Press Freedom Day that took place on last week.
It was actually the Sunday.
On Sunday, the 3rd of May, and the numbers that that's coming out of that report, of the report, it's a very concerning one. It's still pointing the downward spiral of press freedom in a lot of countries.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a lot of countries where you are seeing. Okay, this is a lot of countries that, at least according to one side of the story, I would argue, have been known to have the best freedom of speech.
Mm.
But I'd argue it depends on what you are talking about. Take, for example, earlier this year, there's this Italian journalist. Yeah, there's an Italian journalist. The guy's name is Gabriele Nenzuati. I'm sorry if I'm butchering that name. He was asking, I think, a member of the European.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh no! Go on. Tell the story.
Now the discussion was about how to basically punish Russia to make them pay for rebuilding Ukraine.
Yeah.
And I was like,
which they're anyway already doing. Now they're bombing the other side of that line. But this side,
geopolitics sucks, I swear.
The side that Russia already occupies, Hamad.
Yeah,
they've literally built it up. Literally built. I almost said Kherson. The two regions. The Donbas and the other region. It's like literally two regions. They've literally rebuilt every town, every city. The whole fighting is now concentrated around the nuclear power station. Zaporizhzhia, the power station.
Yeah,
Zaporizhzhia, because the Russians are defending it. The Russians took it, and then now the Russians have been defending Zaporizhzhia.
And the lights are still on.
Yeah,
And
the concern has been from the IAEA is, please don't bomb, shoot, fight close to the thing. Whatever you do, don't do anything.
Mind you, we are in the country where. We just have to, we are in the country that has a history of a nuclear disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, so everyone knows what happens when you do that. So let's not do that. But the question that this Italian journalist asked, which got him fired, was, since we are talking about, punishing Russia by making them rebuild every building they have bombed in Ukraine, are we going to do the same thing by asking Israel to rebuild Gaza?
Mm.
He got fired.
Yeah, I know. I watched it live.
Now,
not live. I watched the discussions because he was fired the next day.
Yeah.
He wasn't fired while he was sitting in the auditorium.
And the politician herself was just, was very fluent in English before that question. Then after that question, then she was terrible at English and also started stuttering.
Mm.
And at this point, you can't help but asking,
wasn't it Kaya Kallas, the EU Commission's foreign minister?
The point is,
head of foreign relations or something like that.
Yeah, the point is, even if you have the right to, Italy, you have the European Union. These are the guys that will run around the world and tell you that we have the best freedom of expression in our countries.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you want to challenge those freedom of expression, just do what that tendency, what guy did.
Mm.
Like, you know, let's apply this, let's apply universal international law application here.
Mm.
Yeah, if Germany was punished to help rebuild Europe after World War II, and we want to punish Russia to rebuild Ukraine, and let's just keep the presidents going.
Mm.
But for some reason, it applied to Germany, poor Germany, and it applies to Russia,
mm.
but it doesn't apply to Israel.
Mm.
You know why that is?
And Israel has been regularly bombing and shooting and sniping and maiming
like
journalists day in, day out.
Yep. Now, the thing is, the reason why a lot of countries that are, you know, on the American side of foreign policy, you know, the bomb diplomacy,
yeah.
is because the US knows if that becomes precedence, the US is going to go broke. Because all you just have to do is write a list of all the countries that the US have bombed to smithereens, and if they have to rebuild all of them,
mm.
I don't think they have enough money to do that.
No, they don't.
That's one heck of a list.
Mm.
Just Afghanistan alone, they will be bled dry.
Even Iraq. Even Iraq, Amut, because. I've got a textbook. I bought the textbook just to be unnecessary because I didn't like getting printouts from the only textbook that NUST had at the time that my whole course was based upon.
Yeah.
So I didn't like the scanned, you know, notes that were taking place. But I ordered the latest edition of the textbook. So in that textbook, Helmut, is the discussion of fabricating information or fabricating a story or fabricating a report. It's a very famous instance of, I think it's a Fox News presenter or it was a CNN guy
mm-hmm.
who literally made up a story that the helicopter he's traveling in is under fire.
Huh?
Is under gunfire. Gunfire from the Iraqi army.
Was this before or after the or during the 2003 invasion of Iraq?
It was during the invasion. So what happened, Hamoud, was that media, the American army allows media to go with,
yeah,
but the media are kept way, way at the back, even behind the supply lines.
Oh,
so
let me guess, for their safety.
Yeah, obviously because they're civilians.
Yeah.
So what happened was it's not the American Army, it's the American Marine Corps. The American Marines were advancing from city, major town to major town on the way to Baghdad. And as they were advancing, they obviously had to leave like small contingents of soldiers just to ensure safety in every settlement so that you don't have, you know, enemy soldiers coming back, taking the settlement back, and then, you know, you've got this little firefight between where you advanced and how your supply lines will probably be impeded by this little, let's call it a bump in the road. Now, there was a whole contingent of military helicopters and aircraft advancing. That was the forward advancing force.
Mm-hmm.
And them, the media, were in a bunch of like four or five helicopters here at the back, coming on a little bit later, but they were literally like an hour behind the advancing force. Né? And then he decides to have a report live from there to show apparently that they are under fire. And he's just saying they are under fire and they are under fire and they are under fire and they are under fire. It comes out 10 years later, he faked it. He faked it just to be dramatic. He faked it just to have something to say, because his news team back in wherever in America wanted content for the day. He faked it. Like sometimes how Happy calls me if I send through a social media update with a video and stuff from a particular event that probably has a major national interest, then she gives me a call. Mm-hmm. And then I'm still at the event and then I give
the update.
Or I come into the studio or, you know, I get scheduled somewhere else and then I still provide the particular update. With this guy, he faked the whole thing from the first sentence to the last sentence. No repercussions. He wasn't fired. He didn't face any particular sort of like industry ban or industry, punitive measures. Zero. But he faked it.
Okay, for one, he faked it is not something I thought I would ever hear in relation to a guy. But the thing is, he did it because it was allowed.
No, I tried to avoid. I tried to avoid the laughing and the joke. I would know.
Look, he did it because it was allowed.
Yeah.
And then you have guys like the late Robert Fisk and this New York Times guy, Chris Hedges.
Mm.
Chris Hedges was fired from New York Times because he was on the ground and he was telling them what's happening on the ground.
Yeah, he was giving them the reality.
He was giving them the reality of what's going on. Lost his job with New York Times.
Yeah.
And you have, Robert Fisk was passing information to the Guardians.
Mm.
He was, I think he was in Baghdad.
Mm.
And he was passing information of what's going on, like pictures of kids being blown up. And he was told, we have got to pay respect to the dead. And I was like, hang on a second. You didn't respect them when they were alive. Mm. You're only respecting them after you bombed them to smithereens.
Mm.
The biggest reason behind the rise of misinformation is mainstream media.
Mm.
Because they kept lying so that they can basically keep face. And why were they lying? Now, this takes us back to the, to the problem I have with politicians in terms of maintaining their sovereignty.
Yeah.
Source of revenue. Now, if you look at the biggest, who hold like, the biggest shares in much of the biggest mainstream medias? The very same people that are donating money to
the politicians. Yeah.
So at this point, I really respect China. And I'm saying that because I think China is looking at at countries like the US and going like, if you allow billionaires to take a center stage, that's what they turn your country into.
Or you allow them to influence.
If you allow them to influence policy.
And national prosperity.
They bring corporate behavior into governance.
Yeah.
Which is everything is centered around how much money do we make.
Yeah.
Not how many people do we take care of.
Yeah. Now, there's an independent, let me call it independent. There's a British YouTube news platform that I follow, who obviously they have this, they've got this sort of like, they call themselves like a Marxist perspective, but it's based upon the issues and the faults they see in their economy,
mm-hmm.
in the British economy, in the UK economy. Now, the concern, Helmut, for unfortunately for them from the UK is that the UK doesn't have colonies anymore. Let's be honest.
So in other words, when a country
doesn't have colonies,
it goes broke.
It starts having real issues and it has to start working, counting every dollar or every cent. So
it's like losing a breadwinner in your family. Now you have to go to
exactly.
And hustle.
So it's primarily the situation for countries like the United Kingdom and France.
Yeah, France.
France is obviously the bane of much of the Pan-African movement discussion. But I unfortunately, the knowledge is also just as limited as it comes to understand what's actually happening in the relationship between the French-speaking Africans and France. Because every year, if you could probably had the opportunity of seeing French immigration numbers,
mm-hmm.
they are not French people who are loving it to go and live in DRC or in Ivory Coast. No, it's actually the reverse. It's much of the Africans going to France. So France has a flow in, net or a positive immigration trend coming inwards. Hence the reason why the French have given, or the French political system now has literally split into two literal halves, even though Macron is trying to be the central politician, because a centrist is partially conservative and nationalist and partially liberal, and, you know, if I can use the phrase, open-minded, that exists in dating, you know, accepting everyone.
Yeah.
So that's what Macron is. But Macron, from the last elections, poor Macron has had to make a hard decision. How does he keep indigenous French citizens happy regarding immigration? Does he side with the hardline, hardcore racist French parties, the right wing, which as they are called, or does he side with the socialist, pro-communism, because there's a communist party of France, you know, communist rhetoric parties in the socialist / communist / you know, labor-based, you know, everyday man's life national parties. And those guys had set up a coalition of three parties between themselves. And he actually, Macron, selected going left-wing, going to the leftists, not to the right-wing. Because the right-wing literally would have meant you would probably have to include a whole bunch. You would have literally what Donald Trump is doing in the U.S., you know, sending out a lot of people that are not legally in his country. They would have had to do the same thing. But now Germany has the same thing. Germany has the same issue as well.
Look, an honest discussion on immigration is not being had in a lot of Western countries. You just gave an example of the UK. Like they didn't have, they don't have the glory that Great Britain had when they had a lot of colonies.
Now they're just the United Kingdom.
Now they're just the, actually they should be UK. Now they have to change it to UBK, United Bro Kingdom. Now, because look, a lot of the money they had, most of it was coming from plundered resources. And now that all those countries have now their own governments, well, they can't just storm in and steal resources like they used to do for the almost 200 years. Now they have to go through diplomatic channels. Now you know why they colonized, because negotiating takes a very long time. Because, look, when you're negotiating, you can say no. Zambia said no. Zimbabwe said no. Ghana said no. And Uganda, for some reason, and Rwanda were like, where do I sign? And now you are going to have yes and no. Kenya side, you know, well, Ruto, for some reason, just signed the deal without going through, well, parliament. And when he got back from Washington, he was told, what the heck did you do? Well, you're supposed to follow this channel. So the court, they had to put, you know, part of the deals on hold. Like, we don't know how you signed up for this, but this is just too invasive. Yeah. So you have yes, no, maybe. So, that's, that's in diplomacy. But in terms of immigration, I totally understand, well, the French president's position, because it can be very, 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 very confusing, because you have to understand the private sector in his country needs to have, you know, natural resources access to do what they do, for them to get all the revenue that keeps France's economy afloat. Now, if you just go straight full right wing, and take, for example, you kick out every immigrant out of that country, what do you think they're going to do when they get here? They will kick out every country that's operating in here, and your economy takes a downward spiral. And you will be right-wing. Right now, we are all white in our country, except we are broke. So now, as if you are the French president, now you have to understand, okay, how do I maintain a relationship with my former colonies so that my private sector can continue operating in those countries and here, and also maintain, you know, a political stability here at home, that, you know, where I will be telling the people that do not want me to maintain a relationship with these countries. I think that's the damn part about being right-wing, because you know that...
you will need someone.
You will need someone.
Yeah.
Look, this economy that you have is running because of the foreign relations you have with other countries.
Even though that foreign relations comes as a result of...
first of all, you showed up unannounced.
Or you participated uninvited.
You started stealing.
Or you started trafficking other people's moms, brothers,
Yeah.
Fathers, daughters and sons, but yeah.
So have you ever been to the south of France? Right. South of France. And south of France is nice because, well, south of Ivory Coast is terrible. So if... Look, man. I don't even know why people think politics is boring.
Do you know how many times I would...
Yeah.
When I watch, like, politics of outside of Namibia, then I go certain thing to myself. It's a... The statements these guys make are like devoid of historical context. Now, us as the media, as journalists, we are supposed to like continuously record the history, the events,
yeah,
which we're doing. But then here's the weird thing. In the broader scheme of things, for example, like let's take Namibia. In the broader scheme of things, for example, like this just energy transition discussion under which you find the green industries as they are now being dubbed, as they are now being labeled. So in many scenarios, Namibia has never seen something of this magnitude. We've never known something like this, which can potentially change the direction of our economic destiny into perpetuity, literally even past our existence. You and I, past that, our descendants probably would be operating somewhere, but literally on a level of how do we see this historic event happening? But in the same time,
yeah,
we've also never known oil.
Nope.
Which is also historic first. Now, the oil is the bad guy. The green situation, it's being labeled green. We know the label. We know the explanation for the label. But we've never really seen the green in action.
All we know is we are looking forward to it.
It's like the IMO future of fuels discussion when the Greek guy said, please take out biofuels. Please take the label of biofuels out of your presentation
because
you don't get them. They are not available. They are not for sale anywhere else. But you guys are labeling biofuels there as an option for us, the shipping companies and ship producers around the world. Please take out the label biofuels. Biofuels are not available, even though some countries produce them, which is very interesting to say, Helmut, because if we look at literally what in the discussion of the green energy transition in Namibia specifically, if we now talk about in relation to the World Press Freedom discussion, and just literally 3 minutes from now we've got another ad creeping up, we've not extensively done enough or had enough discourse in this country. That's not for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
We've not had enough discourse in this country about green energy solutions. But on the opposite end of this, meaning the negative of the statement that I'm saying, is literally, I've also seen why we have not had enough. So you'll now automatically ask me, Dwight, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. What do I mean by that is, well, just yesterday, the guys from the Namibia Green Hydrogen Program said they had a public town hall meeting somewhere here in Ochuzon Jupa region or in one of the O regions, you know, to the far north. And I was like, okay, but you guys didn't communicate this. How would the country know that you guys are coming? Why are they not placing adverts, positioning themselves to say, listen, you're a Namibian, you're part of this national development. This is a national thing.
Maybe that's because they have a WhatsApp group.
But it's only with us, the media guys. While you are looking there potentially at someone else's girlfriend, someone else is writing a story about what they like in that WhatsApp group. And because, yeah, you get such journalists. Journalists are fickle, Helmut. If it isn't sensationalist, they won't report it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'll find, like what we do at Eagle FM and at The Villager, we literally write... it might sound as mundane industrial news, but it still is a benefit. It still is a positive. It still generates something because you can at least say potentially there might be jobs. There's an investment number. This particular milestone had been reached, like an MOU, for example. Like the MOU that was reached between Namport, Walvis Bay Corridor Group, and the ports of Bruges in Belgium and Rotterdam in the Netherlands, for which is literally about the thing that we spoke about. Remember what the South Korean government came to come sign here with Namport in Namibia. Yeah, the green port strategy. So now you see, okay, three major economies are signing strategic partnerships with Namport, with little old Namibia, with its 3 million Namibians, with its tagline of we are too small, too few to be poor.
But they are poor.
But we are important. So at least in the broader scheme of things, the developments are happening. The movements are happening, which we're not in charge of the dance anyway, because we are literally the woman in this discussion. We're being led across the dance floor in the ballroom. Ballroom.
You really went French.
Routine. I actually went on an H. It wasn't even like I was rolling over the R. So we're literally being swept across the floor in all this developments, but we're not in charge of the dance. We're not. We've never been in charge of the dance since day one in 2020 during COVID.
Nope.
And even in the oil discussion, we're not even in charge of the dance because no one wants to touch oil right now. Because the oil is too expensive. Which literally plays into whose hands? The one dancing with us, the EU. They are at the heart, they are in charge of the green energy deal, the big green energy deal, as they call it.
Right, they're beating around the bush. They're the ones with the money.
Besides the money.
Yeah, well, we're just here saying...
We went through two marriage processions with them, Helmut.
You got this. What?
We went through two marriage processions with them.
Marriage number one.
Marriage number one was literally in 2021 when President Geingob came back after announcing, yay, it's us, guys. We're doing green hydrogen. And all us Namibians were like,
what is green hydrogen?
And then he went to Glasgow. And then I said, Ay, toh. That's who we got into bed with. At that stage, I was like, couldn't have been an American at least. At least you would have known the money would flow, like, immediately. You know, we would all be driving double cab buggies home today.
Well, at least the terms and conditions of those that deal would have changed
very quickly. Very often. Let me also be honest.
Yeah,
very
the point often. Of access to information.
But
look, considering who bankrolled, Trump's campaign, I'm not surprised that there's a lot of information access being needed because, Peter Thiel still runs Palantir. And, tech is all they do. COPPA, they need a lot of it because, they are into tech and information, they need a lot of it because of this whole, this whole AI thing. And now, press freedom is going to be tied into governance.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because it will be governance. Your lawmakers will make the laws to make that possible, to set in place all the guardrails. You have the right to express yourself, but you can't come here and start, throwing shades.
But that's the concern, Helmut, because we have an access to freedom or access to information law. But before that, we'll take a quick ad break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. We have 15 minutes left to the hour of six. This is still Home Run with Helmut and Dwight here on Eagle FM. But before we continue, let's take a live read. Vilvicia University 2026 July applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences, a postgraduate diploma in community health nursing level 8. Admission requirements: have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF level 7 or higher from any recognized high learning institution. Must be a registered nurse / midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia HPCNA. Minimum of two years working experience as a nurse / midwife in any health facility. Must write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification, duration 1 year. Mode of delivery, full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicia University, where everyone is an achiever.
This is a live read from the International University of Management, IUM. Traffic advisory for the IUM winter convocation taking place in Ongwediva. The International University of Management, IUM, is proud to announce a historic milestone as it hosts its first ever winter convocation in northern Namibia. The ceremony will take place on Friday, the 15th of May, 2026, at the Ongwediva Trade Fair Center and is expected to attract a large number of graduates, families, and dignitaries. Members of the public are advised to expect increased traffic volumes in and around Ongwediva, particularly near the Trade Fair Center between 6 a.m. and 3 in the afternoon on the day of the event. If you will be attending, please take note. Gates will open at 6 a.m. and will strictly close at 7 a.m. No entry will be permitted after 7. Guests are also informed that babies and toddlers will not be permitted inside the venue. Attendees are encouraged to plan their journey in advance, arrive early, and join IUM in celebrating this memorable occasion. The public is urged to exercise patience and caution to ensure the safety of all road users during this important occasion. IUM extends its heartfelt congratulations to all graduates and looks forward to celebrating this memorable event together. Thank you for your cooperation. So coming back, just where I left off, Helmut. Yes, we're in the dance. The two marriage ceremonies we went through was firstly back in 2021. The second one was obviously the next year in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt, where President Geingob signed with Ursula von der Leyen an MOU, which till this day I have not seen a document of. But I also, you know, in my own particular defense, I didn't go back a year later to try and look for it. Technically, it was a year later.
Yeah.
Yes, but I didn't go and look. Because the nice thing is, if we are still on the press freedom discussion, the nice thing of what the Europeans have done, Helmut, and this is even since you and I started doing the Home Run together, every time we've spoken about anything around, any developments around the European Union, we found literature, actual, written, stamped, officially documented literature by the European Union, even by the UN. I will tell you, Helmut, from ministries, our own ministries. Let me not even go very far. When we did the two discussions on the proposed bills that the American senators or was it Congress people tried to bring in to try and punish South Africa.
Remember the land acquisition discussion.
Yeah, remember the two times that we spoke about it. One was last year.
Yeah.
For one was in 2024. The other one was last year under Trump. So the two guys was the in 2024 under Biden, and the second one was last year during Trump's first year. We found those bills. we extrapolated the reasoning, the motivation as to why this senator, this congressperson, or congressperson, I can't make always remember which one is the higher house or the most powerful house, is that we found the motivations that they enshrined in the documentation, and we can download it from Windhoek directly from their website. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you this, Nai Hamoud. Our parliament, does a better job at keeping key documentation than many of our ministries' websites. The parliamentary website, the Parliament of Namibia, does a better job at document archiving and management on the website of most of the discussions that have taken place in the country than many of the ministries in this country.
Throw SOEs in that bucket.
Throw SOEs in that. Okay, yeah, that's true. We found an SOE that didn't report for 10 years about a key strategic resource.
And we wondered why there was. Why I always describe the time period as from 2020.
From 2010.
2010 to 2020 Fish Road.
Yeah. And it also helps to outline specifically to like our fellow media practitioners out there is that it seems like the way in which we do journalism in Namibia is also a little bit weird, Hamoud.
No way.
Because we would go, a statement, what a minister says or what a ministry issues, ne? But then, like, if we have to look at how does this actually get recorded or the conversation that emanates from there? Because the scenario sometimes is that in some cases, the journalist just gets what is said there at that moment, records it, posts it, shares it, it gets printed, it gets distributed, it gets posted, it gets placed wherever. And then the discussion, for example, like the taxi fare increase of earlier today, the discussion doesn't turn to who it impacts. Now, the impact on the ground, for example, with the Strait of Hormuz war, is prices go up. Not you come along and you add prices, your own price to go up as well.
I mean, I think that's what a lot of Namibians, including yours truly here, expected. And it's just a matter of time before taxi fare goes up, because this is not the first time, remember?
But Hamoud, why would you be sympathetic to the thought? The thought of more pain. That's the thing. We have too much Stockholm syndrome.
No, I'm not being sympathetic. That's my understanding of how things work. You, on the other hand, know your way around how the money moves in comparison to yours truly here.
First finish, yeah.
I think I'm not the only Namibian who has this this type of thinking with regards to what the Minister of Works and Transport did. What are the alternatives?
The alternatives, for example, in that strategy, the government is supposed to take away stress or burdens from us. Not the government is supposed to add burdens and stress to us. It's the reason why we voted for them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm sounding now very political, but it's a bare bones fact.
Mm-hmm.
You gave them a vote.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to add more pain to your pocket. Currently, right now, Hamoud, the next things that will increase from here, it's going to be food.
Yeah.
Because I'm waiting from the NSA for the next trade analysis.
I mean, like the one we from had
March,
for February.
The one for March.
Yeah.
Because we did February, remember?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the one for March. And I'm waiting on the next April is done. So they had to measure January to March for the consumer price index. I'm waiting for the next CPI analysis. And I'm waiting for, because from the CPI, I can already see in some scenarios, things have become unaffordable. The retailers are under pressure.
Yeah.
The ones dispensing food,
They
are under pressure. The concern from this has been the government was supposed to do the opposite. Take a burden away. For example, what's the biggest headache for taxi drivers?
Fuel.
No.
What?
The traffic fines.
Really?
Yes.
Do they care about that?
Take away. Okay, because they collect a lot of traffic fines, unfortunately.
Yeah, they do.
So the biggest burden for what the minister should have done today was take away the traffic fines. Not telling them become lawless today, no. But it's just we'll bring in something else temporarily, or we make all traffic fines less 50%.
Like instead of $2,000 for this particular fine, you'll be paying $1,000.
Yeah, or you're paying $500.
Yeah,
that's not what he announced. That's definitely not enough. And here's the worst part. Traffic fines, the management of the police is not even under their particular purview. It's under the Minister of Safety and Security.
Yeah, makes sense why they made that decision.
So, saying yes only to basically squeeze more blood out of already a dying organism, which is the passenger consumers of Windhoek, is a totally absurd perspective to take. It's a totally absurd perspective to take. So now you will see some taxi drivers will literally start tonight with the
$15.
The $28 for the furthest distance you're going to drive.
$28. It's going to be
30. Yeah, it's going to be 30.
Yeah.
They're literally going to start now with the $15 today. They were told on Monday or on Sunday. They're literally going to start today. Or next week, I think.
No, I think it's 18. Wait, 18th or 8th?
But it has happened, Hal Hamoud. They literally start...
The moment
the announcement comes out, they literally start implementing it, some cab drivers.
Yeah.
So the minister's own announcement will already cause delirium.
Yes, that's on the 18th.
Yeah, we are saying the 18th. The document says the 18th.
Yeah.
The taxi driver does his own thing. It's a reality, Hamoud.
Yeah, it does.
It's one of the reasons why I listen to economists that are neutral to a discussion.
Yeah.
You look at the reality. If a banker comes and tells you, yeah, we aim to see certain things happening over here and certain things over there, or we envisage a position, but when you look historically at what their announcements or estimates were, or forecasts were of economic performance, there is a very clear trend of revision of forecasts. Every time they had to revise their forecasts. Why? Because of Donald Trump showed up. Why? Because an announcement about taxi fares happened. Why? Because the Strait of Hormuz fight is taking a little bit longer than expected. Why? Because one other particular thing popped up once again that was not in their direct view or line of sight in terms of anticipation powers. So, in the broader scheme of things, Helmut, when we look at, the access to information discussion, it's also the kind of critical analysis that has to be applied. Hence the reason also why I believe that our particular sector, the media, we're not adding more critical analysis to the situation. We're not. And specifically, since the season was now of graduation and XYZ, and everyone is posting photos for the fun of posting photos, here is the major talking point. This first four months of this year is literally putting a major pressure on the Namibian economy. Yeah. And the quicker we generate data, the quicker we understand how the Namibian government can try and correct action. But if you now come up with a story of just, there's a $2 increase for taxi fare. Based upon what analysis? Based upon what data?
Yeah, but you see, that statement is the one that bringing up questions in my head, I've seen the price, the price tag of fuel in SA. They are already in $30.
Mm.
What's cushioning the blow for us, for example? Well, because if it's happening in South Africa, you think it's already, already be buying it at the same price tag here. I can only imagine how much the taxi fare is going to be.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. The South Africans are making severe jokes, like the one guy said, in this economy, you're eating a Magnum ice cream. You even bought it at a what was the thing's name? You even bought it at a service station. You must definitely be investigated by hawks.
Something is fishy. Maybe it's a hospital money.
Because they said, who still eats a Magnum? Who? But that is actually where potentially the economy is flowing to.
If you look at... when it comes to the price comparison between the fuel price comparison, because this is something that is in public domain.
Yeah.
Between Namibia and South Africa. I think our government, in comparison to the South African government, is doing fairly well in trying to cushion the price tag.
That is the big concern. Some countries around the world are they still have 28 days of fuel.
28 days worth of fuel? That's less than a month.
An economy, the guy that said he's an Australian, said literally his own country literally has a week, 2 weeks worth of fuel, national fuel. What do you think it's for a country like Namibia? I know there was an announcement earlier today. But I was also waiting for it at 12, and it started literally at 1, and I was already busy with something else. Mm-hmm. So... the concern here is
how long do we have before things go haywire?
We can all sing the praises of Dangote to Kingdom Come, but I don't think Dangote will be able to produce fast enough everyone else.
Yeah, no.
And I actually, do you know what I thought about a little bit earlier before we stepped into the studio?
Dependence will be the end of us, yeah.
We probably should have listened to the Iranian ambassador when you and I did the Iran discussion. What's the petroleum thing, man? The refinery.
What on earth would we be refining?
I think we would, because we would buy someone else's crude and bring it here.
Buy it from Angola,
or from Nigeria directly, instead of now waiting for the refined product to get to us.
Yeah, look, if you have to get it from Angola, I know that that's one of those things that's, put out there that, if you just get it from Angola, it will be maybe cheaper, $10. But you do realize you'll have to transport it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
now,
is part of
yeah,
the thing.
You'll have to add that cost to the
and
price.
And insurance.
And it's insurance. And not just that. You will need a facility that will refine it here to meet the refining, the refining standards of the vehicles that is in your country.
Yeah.
And all those things will basically pile up. I'm pretty sure it's going to be relatively cheap, but not as cheap as most of us think.
I know a guy, he sold me a computer. He works there somewhere in Marua Mall. I won't mention names of the business.
Thank you.
But I asked him what happened to his motorcycle. And he said, Dwight, since I literally AliExpressed my motorcycle out of China, the petrol pump literally packed up. And I asked him, does that mean our fuel, the octane we've got in Namibia, is so impure? He said, yeah. There's too much impurity.
So it's not made for... it's made for a specific...
Or specific standard.
Refinement.
Yeah. Of fuel. So you can't just go and get a car from where and bring it to Namibia.
Okay. Explain to Japan.
But that's what they're doing. We're not even getting the Japanese cars. We're getting the Malaysian, Philippines, Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand productions. Because... the Japanese car companies have got massive production plants in that region, Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
So we're getting that cluster of cars, which is literally flooding the market. If you go talk, I spoke to a mechanic, asked him at the start of the year, because I was also once again looking for another car, asked him, so what does he advise about some of the cars brought in, the Asian brands?
Yeah.
He said, don't touch any of them. I asked him, what about the Honda Fit? He said, don't touch it. Gearbox is too weak. The gearbox is not built for Namibia's distances. That automatic gearbox.
Yeah, have you seen the, landmass of most of the countries in Asia?
Yeah. Plus, most of those cars are used in cities. So short distances that they continuously drive. They don't have like Namibians that are literally now it's December, you see me in Divundu. Now it's December, see me in Swakop. Now it's December,
1,500 kilometers.
Just like that. It's just get up and go. No, that's not what they do in those countries. Those countries, the car is meant for city life. It just stays in the city. So our car is also built differently. Now you will have obviously the stubborn consumer that says a car is a car. Ah, a car is a car. No, a car might look like a car to your eyes. But go ask a mechanic that you trust. What do you advise? And that guy will tell you, to make the job easier for me, don't buy that car. Because if a mechanic tells you, don't buy that car, he's literally telling you, I won't find your parts. And if I find a part, your part might come from the scrapyard.
And it's going to be ridiculously expensive.
No, it's going to be a second-hand part. A second-hand part that's more second-hand than the car it's going into.
It's coming from the junkyard, of course. Ah, right. Freedom of expression comes with a, when it comes to things like freedom of expression, the point I like to make is, I like to equate that with human rights because, freedom of expression.
Human right.
Yeah, it is a human right.
Yeah.
And I feel like,
exactly.
That line, is where I'm headed. That line is, the point I like to make is 90% of the time, and this also, civil society organizations to some degree are guilty on these ones. You like to just tell people about rights, without first telling them, yes, you have rights, but those rights also come with responsibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also borrowing that from Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
That, on human rights, of which includes freedom of speech, he's explaining that you have to understand that rights and responsibilities are parallel to each other. You can't have one without the other.
Mm.
You have rights because I have responsibilities to respect those rights. And vice versa. So in other words, if you just say rights are the only one things that matter and responsibilities don't, then as soon as you get rid of responsibilities, your rights also goes out through the window because I won't have the responsibility to respect your rights. And at the end of the day, no one has rights.
Do you know that sounds like reverse communism?
Uh-huh.
No one has rights.
Yeah, then no one has rights.
Yeah. Because when you ever go and think about reverse communism,
yeah,
take away the right of religion,
yeah,
take away the right of freedom of expression, take away the right to know about what impacts your life.
What's going on in the government? Don't.
Take away the right to have a decent living. Take away the right to be educated. Take away the right to... Because literally, it's reverse communism.
Yeah.
The socialist example, it lives in limited capacity in Norway and the Scandinavian countries and even in Canada and even in... What's the country's name? The Arab countries I just mentioned around resources. But the concern has always been, where does your society go from a certain level?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you've sorted out everyone can have access through a universal basic income grant. Everyone has access to money.
Yeah.
Where does your society go from there?
And the parliament is still a boys' club. I like those countries. 9 minutes into...
A boys' club that shows up for a Women's Day event.
Those guys are not serious.
Worst part is they also wear dresses.
Well, to be fair, when you put it like that,
which is it's a cultural dress. Let me qualify it.
Mm-hmm.
But they also wear dresses.
All right, so that brings us to the end of today's home run. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You'll stay blessed and fasten a seatbelt for motorists. And both basically, if whether you own a car or you use public or private transport, the thing is, the White House foreign policy debacle is beginning to bite everyone else, including you and me.
Yeah. On that note, guys, stay tuned, stay sane if you can. I mean, we are in interesting times.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoy the rest of your evening if you can.
Really try.
We will try. Yeah. We definitely will try.
Yeah.